Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan MacLeod. I'm in Midrand today to talk to the CEO of technology distribution business Pinnacle, Tim Humphreys-Davies. Pinnacle, of course, is a subsidiary of the JSE-listed Alviva Holdings. Tim, welcome to the podcast and thank you for talking to Tech Central.
Pleasure. Thank you, Duncan.
Before we talk about the industry and Pinnacle's place in it and, of course, what's happening in the sector, please tell me a bit about yourself. Have you always been in the IT distribution game?
Yes, yeah. I'm 48 years old. I've been with Pinnacle since 2002, various different roles. I took over as CEO in November 2015. Before that, I was the MD. Before that, I was sales and marketing director. And before that, I had a stake in the Cape Town entity. So prior to that, I was the MD of MMW, which was then sold into the now defunct Siltec Group.
Okay.
So we started MMW, Clive Roberts, I'm sure you probably recall him.
I do.
Yeah, great guy. So him and Ken Rice started in 94, 95. I joined them 96 as the Cape Town branch manager. And then I think we listed it in 98, and then there was an acquisitive trail. We bought Modem Warehouse, Super Diamond Computers. That was a sort of era of multimedia upgrades, and it was a very exciting time. Due to, you know, Clive's vision of trying to almost be like a incubation for, it was, you know, an IT sort of platform. He had some great ideas. He wanted to, you know, sort of move the distribution business into, you know, a bigger mass. So he started talking to Siltec, and we were sold into SDD in 99. Mm-hmm. And we all know what happened at Siltec. So after, and then MMW actually merged in with Memtech, if you recall, sometime during that period as well, sort of 2000 2001, and unfortunately Siltec went into liquidation 2001. So thereafter I joined Pinnacle. But prior to that, yeah, I was with a small niche distribution company in Cape Town, North Coast Trading, and that's so succinctly. I've always been in IT distribution from day one, bar casual jobs that, you know, most people do, bar work and
yeah,
sort of stuff.
You know. Sure, but you're originally from the UK, right?
Yes, yeah. So went to school in the UK, went to university in England, and then, as is the norm with a lot of people, you know, took a gap year, and myself and a friend were aspiring to travel, you know. Secretly, I didn't tell my parents at the time, but I'd done a exchange program in France, the University of Montpellier, mm-hmm. and really enjoyed the Mediterranean lifestyle. And I kind of had an inkling that Cape Town might be similar to France, but you know, with the English speaking. So we our plan was to spend 6 months in South Africa and 6 months in Australia. I never made it to Australia. He made it to Australia, and then he went back to the UK. And I was fortunate enough to meet some great people at an early stage, and it was in at a very transitional and exciting time. It was 1992, I think. So Mandela mm-hmm. had been released. You know, we were coming up to the 94 elections, and it was just a fantastic time to be in the country, and I was very, very privileged to witness that transition. It was just wonderful. And you just kind of stumble across a couple of things. I did postgraduate thing. You do casual jobs. I did selling beach bats on London Beach. So this is in Cape Town. And we had a spit bri business, and you know, I was always fairly entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
So enjoyed the lure of money, and I just enjoyed Cape Town. It was very it covers very much me. And I still live there, although yeah. I commute, as you know, Duncan. I commute up to Joburg. So wonderful city, great people, and I really, really enjoyed it. So it kind of, you know, fell into a job at North Coast Trading, and then I applied for permanent residency and got it. And, you know, my wife and kids are here. So although I've still got a British accent and I've got a British passport, I kind of see myself as South African, really.
Yeah, probably been here almost as long as the UK.
I think more now, yeah. So I came here when I was 22, 23, I'm 49 now. So yeah, I've been in South Africa longer than England. Still go back there, and when it's convenient, you know, you can use your British passport. But yeah, very much South African.
It always amazes me how some people lose their accents quickly when they leave their home country, and others keep it for the rest of their lives.
Do I still have one?
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
Because if I go back to England, everyone says I sound like a Saffa.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I can't hear my voice, but
maybe a bit of both. Okay, Tim, so Pinnacle, it's a subsidiary in the Alviva Holdings stable. Alviva used to be called Pinnacle Holdings, but there's been a big rethink in recent years regarding how the group is positioned. There are now two major distribution businesses in the group, Pinnacle, which you head, and Axis Work Group. And at a media dinner a couple of weeks ago, I joked that you make the money for the group and the Alviva guys get to spend it on acquisitions, etc. Just maybe to talk us through how the strategy of Alviva has changed. It's expanding beyond the traditional distribution mandate, right?
It is, yeah. Look, I think our current CEO, Piers, he sort of built on the original philosophy. I think Arnold, our previous CEO and then executive chairman, had that philosophy that Pinnacle, you know, Pinnacle and Pinnacle Technology Holdings were the two entities that it really ran. And then with the acquisition of Axis, and remember that Work Group came across from Siltec, and then they merged, you know, Arnold merged them together. So it was, you know, he was always on the acquisitive hunt. But, you know, the sort of brand difference between Pinnacle and Pinnacle Technology Holdings was not as clear as it is now. Mm. When Pierre took over sort of two and a half years ago, and, you know, that was officially, the official name change was, I think, February last year, you know, Pinnacle Technology Holdings morphed into Alviva. And there was a very clever and clear statement that there was a brand difference between Alviva, which is a technology investment holding company, and Pinnacle, the distribution business. And it's pretty clear now, you know, that Alviva's got a very exciting stack of companies that have sort of been germinated from the distribution engine. And Pierre makes it very clear, and I share that philosophy, and I know Craig does as well, that if you get the metrics right in distribution, it can be a cash cow. It's not easy, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're aspiring to be better always, but, excuse me, if you get the working capital right, you get your stock right, and you can turn your book, and you really can develop a nice, healthy cash flow. So that is Alviva's philosophy now, is that distribution is not particularly sexy. You know, you've got low, you know, PEs of sort of traditionally sort of 5, 6, 7, and, you know, as a group, I think I'm not 100% sure on the current share price, but somewhere around 9, you know, that's not a particularly attractive PE. So I think we're still labeled with that sort of PE, that distribution PE, but the cash that both Axis and Pinnacle generate is pretty healthy, and that enables Alviva to make acquisitions into, you know, more of the sort of sexy space, like the data-centrics acquisition, the services space, where your sort of net operating margins are far superior to distribution, because the results are there. You can have a look at our net operating margins. I think they're pretty good, but they're not as good as services, you know, services and scalable sort of cloud-based businesses. So that's the philosophy, and it works. I mean, Axis is a fantastic business, and they generate a lot of cash. You know, Pinnacle's a pretty healthy business, and we generate quite a lot of cash. I think last fiscal distribution generated, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was sort of north of 400 million rands worth of cash, which, you know, obviously fed the acquisitive spree. And as you know, Alviva's not heavily geared, so, you know, you can see that the model, I think, is working.
So I was just having a look at the half-year numbers to December 2017, which is the most recent set of financial results from Alviva Holdings. And the group reported almost 5 billion rand in revenue from ICT distribution out of a total of 6.4 billion. So it's still the vast chunk of the business from the top line perspective. How do you see that revenue mix changing going forward over the next few years?
Look, I think that was the first full half that data centrics were consolidated, but revenue is relevant always in terms of market share and measuring yourself against your peers in the industry, but it's the bottom line that I think the stakeholders and particularly the shareholders look for.
Yeah.
So I think if you look at if you broke that down into a PBT number, distribution would be a lot smaller percentage. But I think distribution did have quite a strong 6 months in certain areas. The infrastructure, as Pierre said in our results presentation, was weak, and we see that as a result of weak government spend and infrastructure spend. But Access particularly had a very strong run in their software business. So I think to answer your question more directly is that you will see a greater percentage of the Alviva group morphing towards services, the data centrics. There've been a number of acquisitions now, the Syntrex, the DG, once competition approval, if it does give approval, goes ahead, and those type of things. And obviously as data centric scales as well. So I think you'll see an even mix. I think this half was a little bit of an anomaly. I think if you go back to the full fiscal of 2017, I think it was more of a, let's just work it out, there was a 12 billion rand revenue and distribution was, it was still quite a big chunk of it.
But that mix is going to change.
I think so, Duncan. I think so, yeah. I think you'll start to see it. If you look at the acquisitions, there's very little acquisitions that are happening in the distribution space, bar the one I mentioned to you the other day, which we spoke about at the February numbers as well, which was the VH Fiber. But VH Fiber is a bit of an anomaly. I know we want to chat about that later, so maybe I'll leave that to later to explain that.
Out of interest, where does the Alviva name come from? Does it mean something?
It does, Duncan. Now, I'm going to have to dig into the archived hard drive of my memory. Pierre explained it to me. I think it means new beginnings.
Okay.
I think so.
What, in Latin or something?
No. It's an African, one of the official languages.
Okay.
So, but I don't speak from a position of authority. I can Google it quickly.
No, that's good score. I'll look it up after the podcast. Yeah. So, let's talk about distribution. You mentioned it's a tough business. It's competitive. The margins are low. Coupled with that, the economy has been weak for several years. How do you ensure you still make meaningful money in this game?
So I think if you look at the traditional ICT distribution business that Pinnacle addresses, it's predominantly the client business. And I think we had a good look at ourselves when I took over. It's always, we had an opportunity then to sort of always, control, alt, delete and say, okay, so what are we doing and where do we think it's going to go and how are we going to capitalize on the high growth areas? So 3 years ago, we did have an offsite and we realized that, the traditional ICT client distribution business is really a commodity-based, supply chain fulfillment model. And therefore, your margin possibility is not great. It's always there, but, it typically could lend itself to a race to the bottom in terms of margin. So you've got to reinvent yourself in terms of either product or the services or the value that you add. So, we developed this mantra around delivering the exceptional, which is part of that value add, and we embrace that every day, it's part of our brand essence. So delivering the exceptional in terms of to the reseller base on the client business, which is still 50% of our business, but, it's adding those technical services around, assemblies, imaging, packaging, delivering direct to the customer, break fix. So you can blend, but it's still single digit margins. The migration our strategy was then we identified that there was a lot more margin opportunity and there was a lot more growth opportunity in following where the market was going, which is essentially sort of infrastructure cloud based, focus. So for us, that meant, a greater focus on our infrastructure business, which is our DataNet division, which encompasses Modrac, which is our factory. So we manufacture in South Africa the cabinetry. It's a great brand. And the infrastructure business in the data center. So that's patch panels, the high-end fiber, those kind of products. So we had a very successful 2017. Unfortunately, a large number of the projects that ended in fiscal 2017, so that's, June 2017, have not not sort of been duplicated in the previous financial periods, the second half of the calendar year 2017, but we're starting to see some resurgence there. So that was the sort of focus and then our surveillance and security business, the PinSec business, which has got the product sector sort of Access, Milestone Software, Bosch, Hikvision, and Access Control and Fire Suppression. In it, you know, that's where a lot of spend is happening. So we put a lot of resource, people, infrastructure, and stock into that area, and we definitely saw the benefit. So we sort of, I call the client business, it's not a particularly nice thing to say, but it's sort of the necessary evil. You know, we're good at it, I think. We can always be better, but, you know, of the $5 billion that Pinnacle does, it's sort of, you know, $2.5-3 billion, and it gives us scale, and it gives us, you know, it gives us relevance to the vendors. But the big focus in Pinnacle, the traditional Pinnacle micro business, has then been to build an enterprise-ready team. And that's really a different type of model. That's a value-added distribution model. And in that stack, we put a sales team together called PINES. So we created a new vertical, so Pinnacle Enterprise Solutions. We staffed it with some highly skilled people, led by Gerrit Groos and Johan Lotter, great guys, very highly skilled. And we focused really on the non sort of industry leader products. So in that stack, we've got some great products. We've got the hyper-converged offering with Nutanix, which has just exploded for us. It's been a fantastic product for us. We've got the Alcatel voice and data stack. We've got Supermicro, which is one of the great secrets that we hold. It's a wonderful product, especially in the HPC, so high-performance computing stack. We've then added HPE. We were very fortunate to be appointed an HPE distributor. We've got the Dell EMC stack in there, and then we've got the traditional Lenovo System X in there. So we've got a complete offering. Mm. And then the trick is to then skill everybody up, and it's been quite a process. So we're heavily focused on certifying our team and really trying to add value to that reseller. So the large reseller like your Datacentrix, Business Connection, they've got skills. They can, and TCM, they can buy direct. Where distribution has a niche, and where we've sort of explored that niche is really in the medium enterprise and the slightly smaller enterprise that doesn't necessarily have the resources, the financial willingness to skill up, and they can leverage off our skill set. So we've really started to work very closely as a value-added distributor. I mean, you get a lot of niche players in that space like Bitrate and some, you know, First Distribution is not a niche player. They're a big company, but, you know, they're quite strong in that space. And invariably that's meant that we compete with our sister company in Access, which is fine, mm-hmm. you know. And I think there's often a lot of confusion in the market. Why do Pinnacle and Access compete when you've got the same shareholder? Because we address different sectors of the market. So I'll give you an example. So they're a Cisco distributor in their advanced technology group of sales guys or their division. And we've got our PINES and our Huawei and our team there. And then we distribute Huawei as an example. So, you know, the group benefits from both. So you can compete and go head to head. There's no need to, you know, there's no need to fall over each other. There's enough space in the market. So it's been a success story. We can always do better. But I was looking at the numbers yesterday for March. It's up to like 30% of our business now. So we're quite happy with some of the progress we've made, particularly with Nutanix. I mean, it's really an exciting new development in the data center.
Right. In terms of the supply chain and optimization of the supply chain and the processes involved, I mean, how much improvement can you still do there? I mean, we've seen how Amazon in the US, for example, has used technology to great effect to seriously optimize the supply chain and compete head-on with traditional retailers. Is there more opportunity, do you think, in the supply chain for that sort of optimization and using technology to make it more efficient?
Definitely, Duncan. We were sleeping, to be honest. I mean, I got a big fright.
Yeah.
You know, every CEO talks about digital transformation and automation and, you know, it's meaningless and, you know, it's one of these kind of buzzwords until you start applying it to, you know, everyday use. And everywhere I look, I realize that we can, you know, we can transform digitally so much better. Mm. So we've got a very clear investment cycle in optimizing that will result in optimization of the supply chain, which is a nice way of saying we're going to invest some money to make us more efficient. Some of our competitors, in my opinion, are ahead of us in that space, and we've got a lot of work to do. I think we do an okay job. I think we can get product from China to our end customer in a good time frame, but I think we can do a lot better. And I've realized that you have to, the cycles of reinvestment, you have to reinvest, and now's the time for Pinnacle to reinvest. Well, I'm not talking huge amounts of money, but we've got two projects at the moment. We're actually going through quite an exhaustive process of looking at our ERP system, and that necessitates also you look at your process within your warehouse or your warehouse management system. There's a lot more density that we can get out of our warehouse, and there's a lot more efficiencies. I'll give you an example. In, you know, there's, when we scan our products in, it's important that we serialize them. You know, you can get an electronic sort of batch of serial numbers, but you've got to verify that the supplier that sent you 10,000 laptops has really sent you 10,000 laptops. So you've got to do a first to last scanning them. And often you've got to do that manually. You can use RFID, but a lot of the suppliers don't want to use it because it's too expensive. There's some technology there, like almost like X-ray type cameras that you can deploy in your receiving bay that scan it in 1 second. Just think about how that, and that's an example of digital transformation and to a degree automation. You know, your efficiency, your distribution is about supply chain. It's about getting product from X to Y as quickly and as cost effectively as possible. We always talk about OPEX ratios to revenue, and that really is something that we are heavily focusing on. So I think what's been good, Duncan, is like any disruption to any industry is you've either got to adapt or you die. And, you know, there's that wonderful sequence. I don't know if you saw those BCX adverts, you know, about digital transformation, you know, about, you know, like Airbnb and that kind of point. And I think to a degree the e-tailers, you know, the Amazons and the, to a degree, Takealot here and the Loots have challenged distribution. Because if you think about it, Takealot could potentially be a massive threat to Pinnacle. You know, depending upon...
They have the warehouses. They have the warehouses.
Mm. They're a distribution house. Mm. You know, and they have the AI to predict, you know, behavior. But fortunately for us, they're, at the moment, they're addressing the retail sector. And, you know, they're addressing, I think the last stat that I saw was, you know, 1.25% of the total 1 trillion rand retail spend is online. But, you know, it's going to scale, and it's going to scale very quickly. And for us, it's about... you know, working with those partners. And often if you want to work with those partners, again, it's about digital transformation. They still need a distribution house. They're not an import house, but it's about embracing, making it as efficient as possible and EDI and that kind of stuff. So it's definitely, I think, honestly, Duncan, I think it's been a good thing for us personally within Pinnacle. I can't speak for the industry, but I look at, you know, the likes of Tarsus. I know they've invested heavily. They've got some, I know Axis is investing heavily. I don't really know about the others, but, you know, you've got to adapt.
Yeah. What happens if Amazon comes to South Africa? What does it mean for you guys?
Well, I think they're here anyway. I mean, you know.
I mean, from a
physical barrier. Look, they're here from. I mean, they've got a call center in Cape Town, and, mm-hmm. and in my opinion, they're here. I mean, you know, they're here. I mean, they've you know, the old adage that you can't, you know, buy product and, you know, customs is going to stop it and unpack it and pay duties. They've circumnavigated that. Mm. You know, speaking on a, this is purely just a personal opinion, but, you know, either Media 24's positioning Takealot, you know, there, I mean, I don't think it's everyone speculating about that. If they, you know, I mean, there are different elements. Amazon's such a giant. I mean, Amazon Web Services are here. I mean, they've got incredible traction. So from that perspective, they're here. And, I think that if I was a food retailer, I think I'd be more worried about Amazon than anything else, because what they're doing in the UK is, and the US is probably terrifying to the likes of Walmart and Sainsbury's and Tesco's and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. because, you know, they seem to be like Pac-Man. They just consume industries. so I think I wouldn't say it's not a threat. We've got to watch it very carefully and react. But if they physically started setting up warehouses here, I think their quickest route to market would be an acquisition of Takealot. And then I think you'd have the same animal that you would have now. But I don't know. I don't run Amazon, thank goodness.
So let's talk a bit about how, and I know we've touched on this already to some extent, but we've seen major shifts in the technology industry over the last 20 years. Back in the 1990s, when you started in this game, you know, it was about Windows 95 and, you know, people buying PCs for the first time. the market has shifted substantially. We look at the latest numbers from IDC and Gartner, and we see that the PC industry has been in decline for a number of years now. Yeah. Mobile has obviously taken off in a big way. Smartphone demand, huge. How have these industry shifts affected Pinnacle? How have you adapted to perhaps the shift away from traditional PC computing to mobile and some of the other dynamics in the industry?
Look, I definitely think we've lost unit share. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the market, you know, traditionally was sort of, you know, 455, and I'm talking not so long ago, 2-3 years ago, you know, sort of 450, 500K a quarter, you know, then it sort of went down to 400K a quarter and has even touched as low as, you know, sort of 320, 350K a quarter in terms of unit quantity. So I'm talking desktops and notebooks, excluding tablets. You know, in the sort of 2012, 2013, you saw a sort of sudden upsurge in tablets, and you still see tablets. I mean, we're the number two tablet supplier in South Africa after Samsung. We see a lot of tablets into the education space, obviously. And then we see a fair degree of sort of ruggedized two-in-one. So to a degree, I'd say the form factor that what you were referring to, 95, there was a definitive, very much a desktop form factor, and there was a notebook form factor. And then slowly but surely, you know, from those times where you had an 80-20 sort of desktop notebook sort of split, you know, obviously 3-4 years ago, it suddenly morphed to more of a 60-40 split in terms of the notebook versus desktop. But interestingly enough, the desktop is still very relevant. It's in a different sort of, not necessarily one, you know, standard generic, you know, tower, you know, like format, but there's the mini PC, which we found in certain verticals to still have a lot of legs. You know, for example, in the basic education space, we've done a number of large transactions with small format PCs, and you know, the call center environment and a number of other verticals. So what I think you've seen is you've seen a splintering, and I'm not sure that IDC always measures those units. We've certainly seen a less volume than we used to with our ProLine brand. But, you know, we're still doing, you know, 15K a quarter of desktops on the ProLine numbers. You know, so notebooks definitely off. Are you seeing it being replaced by tablets? No. You know, it's definitely not the same number that it was. So where are we seeing revenue? You know, where have we made that number up in what I alluded to earlier, the enterprise space? Interesting enough, the component space is still very relevant. You know, like, in fact, our component business has actually grown over the last 2 to 3 years. So that, in that, I mean the peripheral, so your external hard drives, you know, your sort of little NAS boxes, your Bluetooth headsets, you know, your smart devices, your voice-activated devices, your sort of IoT-type devices, and then your VC market, you know, your mobile headsets, you know, your wireless headsets, Logitech-type products. That's still very, very relevant to us. You know, we sell more external hard drives every quarter. Because obviously, you know, it's just a personal opinion, but the content that people capture on those devices requires storage. You know, you back up your phone. Not everyone's comfortable with it in the cloud. So you kind of have like a basic kind of a RAID, you know, little, you know, two hard drive backup. Everyone has them at home. You know, a little QNAP device or whatever, two terabyte hard drives. And we're seeing massive sellouts in that.
It's almost counterintuitive, because you'd expect as we move into the cloud era that there'd be less demand for end user storage.
But we don't see that. No, that's what's fascinating. Yeah. So we map our external storage drive sales every quarter. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's predominantly through your sort of retail channels. You know, your macros, your games, your incredible connections, those kind of guys. And I promise you, Duncan, we haven't seen a drop off in terms of external sales. And those kind of, you know, slightly smarter devices, your QNAPs, your Synologies, those kind of external boxes where you're putting a basic RAI. Remember, a lot of them have got cloud software with them. So I've got the two drive system, and you have the option to back it up in the cloud. Mm-hmm. You know, but I don't think there's been a total embracement that cloud is 100% safe. So people are sort of, let's still have that backup at home, and also external hard drives for content. You know, it's easy to, you know, to it's transportable. So I think with the prevalence of quicker internet and better content from the likes of MultiChoice and Showmax and Netflix, you know, maybe, I don't know, I would have expected Netflix and Showmax to, exactly what you say, to kill the demand for external storage. Maybe we're creating more content with our smart devices. Certainly me, on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, photographs, video.
Jeez, I'm taking more photos than I've ever taken before, you know.
Yeah. So Tim, we're in a weak economy. We've been in a weak economy for quite some time. We've just seen an increase in the VAT rate. What is this, all this meaning for IT purchasing decisions? Are we, if the economy does start to pick up significantly later this year, which some people are now suggesting, I see the Reserve Bank saying this morning that there may be a stronger than expected pickup in South Africa's economy. What might that mean for the sector? Do you think there might be a sudden splurge again on IT equipment, or do you think that especially corporate buyers are quite, what's the word, are quite
reserved, conservative
yeah. about their spending at the moment?
Look, I think our business model, I'm going to answer that question in a broad way. I think our business model is that we've never wanted to be too dependent upon one sector. So if we look at our business, we have 12 different sectors that we really address. You know, retail, I mean, there are multiple, but retail being one of them, semi, corporate, public sector. So I think in 2017 calendar year, no doubt about it, you saw a contraction of both public sector spend, corporate spend, and semi spend, and retail. July, August, September was very, very challenging for all distribution. And you know, you get visibility of vendor numbers and you can see a big contraction. Interestingly enough, in October and November, the retail sector started to recover. So you get the dispos from retail, you can see their stock, you can see their sell-through, and it happened. And it happened quite quickly. And I think it was a prelude to, you know, the ANC elective conference that there was going to be something positive coming out of that. And I just think, you know, obviously the RAND was strengthening, and I just think the economy was recovering. So we saw an early, so green shoot recovery from retail, and I think if you look at Massmart's numbers, if you look at what the guys were saying in their full years, although they didn't have big revenue growth, they had some positivity and they saw some uptick. So I think retail, you know, so general merchandise retail started to already recover in November, December, okay, and some of the, you know, the GDP growth rates, you know, sort of show that, you know. What we've seen in this quarter that we've just closed off now is in certain sectors. So it's not across the board. So we're not shooting the lights out, Duncan. Mm-hmm. Let's be very clear on that. But in certain sectors, there are more than green shoots. It's starting to recover. And you can see, so we measure things the whole time. You know, we're big on measurement efficiency dashboards. We can track calls, emails, pipeline, number of quotes. All those activity measurements point to a larger volume of business and a larger, you know, busyness. And, you know, people say, oh, well, I was busy at work today. You know, how many calls did you have? How many emails? So we track number of emails per person, transactions per person, we track everything. And you can see this, you know, you can see that general recovery. But it's a very interesting thing that I've said for a very long time, just a personal opinion again. The distribution is the canary in the mine. I promise you, when distribution recovers, in 2008, 2009, we recovered quicker than anyone else did. But in my opinion, it takes 2 to 3 quarters for that lag. Because if you think about it, people start spending money on IT in a corporate or semi space when they're employing people. Mm. Right? That multiplier effect only lags in 1 or 2 quarters. It's just a personal opinion. But the early indicator of an economic growth recovery is your semi sector. I promise you. It's the heartbeat of the South African economy. And Pinnacle's always addressed that very strongly. We have 12,000 resellers, of which 6,000 to 7,000 are very active. And you can see the accounts picking up. You can see the activity that on a client, product, on servers, on software. So we actually had an incredibly strong February, March in our semi sector. I'm not saying we shot the lights out. Our government spend was poor still, which is to be expected. Retail was better. Corporate, not. Mm-hmm. Still a lot of, as you correctly pointed out. So I think the corporates, you know, are still sitting on a pile of cash. I think there's still some wait and see sort of how is, you know, Cyril's sort of new deal and send me going to actually manifest itself in better spend. But I see there's a lot of recovery happening in mines, you know, and then they're going to start spending money, you know, although there's been, you know, 1 or 2 little things that don't always, you know, the RAND slipping a little bit, but, you know, I think the business, and we speak to a lot of broad business across many, many different sectors, and the broad sentiment from a very sort of anecdotal basis is there's a lot more confidence and there's a lot more willingness. Interestingly, the regions are always the first sign. So the Cape Town, the...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. Cape Town, I've got a theory about Cape Town. Cape Town does very well in the first quarter of the year because of the hospitality spend. Our Cape Town office is absolutely flying. Absolutely flying. So, you know, somebody asked me the other day, have you seen the water crisis impact your Cape Town numbers? No. I mean, the guys in Cape Town are really doing well. They've closed one or two bigger ones, but you know, the general sort of semi activity. And I promise you, 2008, 2009, I saw that as well. So just a kind of off the cuff prediction. I think you're going to start to see some much better economic activity in the sort of latter part of the second quarter. You know, sort of April's still always a bit of a funny month with all the holidays and everything. But May, June, traditionally the IT industry goes to sleep a little bit in July, and then you know, sort of August, you know, September, you start to see that sort of retail pick up in the corporate spend and people closing out their budgets and.
Looking at the last time, I mean, you mentioned 2009. What was the lag between the SME recovery and the corporate?
2 to 3 quarters.
2 to 3 quarters. Yeah. Okay. So later this year, we may see a big pickup in.
So you're going to come. I know you're going to record this, so you're going to come. You're going to come and ask me as it happened, and I'll probably be wrong. So you know, you never know. Predictive economics is not my speciality. It's just an opinion. But yeah, I can only tell you what I've seen before. I'm not sure it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
But I can tell you it's happening. And I think a lot of, you know, chat to Pierre, who's got a broader view than me, I think he certainly sees a recovery. I think, I think the sentiment is there. It's just how and when it manifests itself into real sort of economic activity.
Mm. And does it continue?
And does it continue? Correct, yeah. Look, I mean, everything that the government is, you know, is saying is positive. You know, you mentioned the VAT increase. I think that's tough, you know, for certain sectors. But I think it's a necessary, you know, evil. And I think it sends the right signal that the government's not, you know, is very serious about not running a deficit, which is, in my opinion, very, very important for any country. And I think the fiscal discipline that we had under Trevor Manuel, if we can aspire to return to those sort of levels, I mean, not many people remember this, but we ran surpluses.
Mm.
Different economic time frame. But, you know, the government's willingness to do that, that's a positive signal. I think the emotive sort of send me type thing, I think he's touched a lot of nerves. And, I see a lot of large business wanting to, you know, the CEO initiative, our business leaders like Adam Gore and those kind of guys, I think the response from them has been fantastic. And if that can manifest itself, I think there's a great initiative. I saw it in the Sunday Times about this learnership program.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's those are the kind of initiatives. You know, we embrace that learnership. We've had fantastic traction from our learnership program. I think we must have employed, honestly, over somewhere between 50 to 60 learners that we placed here. You know, so that YES program, I'm very excited about that because, you know, full employment, it's a utopia, but, I mean, that's where we've got to get to. And if that can happen and government can put those kind of programs in place, business realizes that they've got a social responsibility as well, which all of them do. I mean, we're not business leaders at our level, but, you know, the guys much higher up the food chain, and I see they're doing it, then I'm very positive. And, you know, positivity generally leads to economic activity.
Let's change tack entirely and talk about your fiber optic business.
Yes, yeah.
You're venturing into fiber optics through a business called VH Fiber Optics. That was an acquisition, was it?
Yes, yeah. So we bought the business effective 1 December. We told the market about it in February. Very interesting business. So they are basically a distribution business, in the competing almost in our infrastructure division, Datanet. But unfortunately, to be honest, we kind of missed that fiber boat with Datanet. We're very strong in the copper space, but we really missed that. And Patrick and his team put together a wonderful business about 8 years ago, and they've really scaled that business beautifully. So basically what they do is they import product. Prismia is their exclusive product. It's a world leader in the fiber optic space, and they've got a couple of really innovative products. And then they basically provide product, but then they provide services. So they provide services to the likes of Vumatel, South African Digital Villages, Metrolink, Telkom, Vodacom, MTM, those kind of guys. And they basically manage the fiber to the home and fiber to the business rollout. So they're not a carrier and they're not a last mile provider. They are a provisioning services to the likes of Vimatel.
They actually provide the fiber?
They provide the fiber, Duncan, yeah. But they also do, they have a bunch of subcontractors, so they actually do the, you know, the civils. So, you know, somebody like SADV will say to them, okay, we want this area fibered, or this business part fibered. So they have the contractors, they project manage it, so the contractors go dig up the road, They dropped the trenching, you know, and I'm probably talking rubbish here because I actually don't know the technicalities of it, but Patrick does. You know, and then they blow the fiber, which is not what you and I think is not. It's a machine, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know what it is. But so it's quite a technical process, and they're very good at it, and they provide products and services. So it's an exciting business. But it's in a high growth area. You know, somebody referred to it as a land grab the other day, and you can see the kind of level of activity. You know, Dark Fiber Africa, Vumatel. If you look at the movement in equity ownership there, you know, there's some big money. I think I mentioned it to you the other day. There's some big money behind those. You just Google it, so I'm not saying anything that's not in the public domain. But you know, REM grows in there.
Yeah.
You know, there's some activity there, and they know.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of, if you were to compare it, it's like the cell phone tower industry was, I don't know, 30 years ago,
yeah.
Or 10, 20 years ago.
So you think there's long-term potential here? Oh, yeah. This isn't. I mean, aren't we going to see the suburbs deployed and 2 years from now the network's built?
So there are different types. Yeah, so to a degree, yes, but I've done this 2-year cycle.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are different parts of that business, you know, that – so in – that was the question that we asked when we looked at the business. Are we buying a business at the top of the cycle? No. I think it's still in the early part of the curve. So the estimation that the Fiber to Home Industry Association gave us when we looked at the acquisition was there's only 10% penetration at the moment. So there's a 90% TAM, and that's just South Africa. Don't forget, across the borders, you know, and then that's the first part of the business. The second part of the business is that once you've laid that cable, there's a maintenance element. So there's that, and not quite as exciting, but it doesn't just end there. And then the proliferation of 5G is actually, most people think, but surely 5G will take away from fiber. No, it won't, because 5G necessitates a greater tower density, which means more connectivity, which means more fiber. And you know, there's also the, you know, there will be, you know, technology advancements. So when fiber first went in the ground 15 years ago, you know, it's a different type of fiber, not necessarily, but there are different. And again, you know, I must plead ignorance here. I'm not that technical on that side of things. But you know, in my mind, there will definitely be you know, greater opportunities there. So no, I think, I mean, I look at the growth rates of that business. It's a fantastic acquisition for us, really.
I actually think companies like Vumatel, OpenServe, and others that are deploying FTTH are in a fantastic position because of 5G. And you know, the mobile operators are going to need the capacity to basically deploy high speed broadband from every lamppost.
That's exactly what it is.
And who's got the fiber running
there
past this lamppost?
That's why. Dark Fiber Africa, that focused on the metropolitan links, is starting to buy, is looking at, you know, they've bought SADV now.
Yeah.
Yes, they have, yeah. South African Digital Villages. And, you know, that's just one part of the, you know, so 5G will proliferate, there's no doubt about it. And then in my opinion, and this is just, you know, speculation as well, the sort of extraterrestrial content carriers, you know, the multi-choices, they've, in my opinion, they've realized that that's not a sustainable model, and it's IP-based, you know, content, so hence Showmax. You know, so those type of, you know, IP deployment, that requires fiber. You know, if your average user is streaming Showmax, right, then he's not streaming extra, you know, he's not streaming it on a satellite.
Yeah.
He's streaming it. It's like the Sky model in the UK. I mean, you know, the first thing Sky did 25 years ago is they dropped fiber in every single, well, they didn't do it, they got somebody else to do it. And then, you know, with that, they were able to provide, you know, voice, data, and everything in all one. You know, so once you've got fiber there, I think the content providers will drive it very, very hard. So, you know, MultiChoice, very smart bunch of guys in the Media 24. We know, I've seen some of their, what they're, so I think I've got a bit of an inkling of what they're up to in terms of IP content deployment, and I think they're on the right track there. So that will only, in my opinion, further the need for fiber. Then you've got lots of stuff happening up across border. I mean, and Namibia's got an exciting opportunity up there at the moment. Botswana's got a plan. You know, Mozambique's, it's not going to stop there. You know, so we've got a very positive view of that business.
I know it's not in your direct purview, but I want to ask you about it anyway. And it's a company in the Alviva group called Grid cars,
yeah.
Which I believe does software around electric vehicle charging stations.
That's right,
it sounds very interesting. Can you talk a little bit about it?
I can, Doug. Yeah, I'm not the expert. So Pierre spoke about it at the September presentation. So Grid Cars was acquired by SolarF. So SolarF, Alviva has a 51% business of. So that's a PV hybrid.
Solar power
provisioning organization, and they came across Grid Cars and they bought a stake in Grid Cars. So from what I can understand, and it was a presentation that was done within the group to the guys, from what I can understand, they provide basically refueling stations in a very simplistic way to electronic vehicles. But I think that the activity space there, or the excitement space there, is actually in the payment mechanism. So it's actually a software driven company. So look, so they've got hardware. So you drive your BMW, whatever model it is,
i3,
yeah, and you plug into a charger, and that's great. So there's a bunch of batteries there that I'm sure are Elton has provided, somebody's provided, great. So you plug in, you charge, but how do you pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the space that excites the Alviva guys in that space. So that's what I understand. So they did the pitch to us, and I was very excited. And Pierre showed it to the analysts in the fiscal 2017 presentation, which was in September. We had a couple of questions from the analysts, how's this relevant and is it a big bet? In my opinion, I think it's one of those big bets. But it hasn't cost Alviva, from what I understand, an awful lot of money. And, it's one of those sort of, hallelujah type, things. I think it's definitely a space. I mean, I was chatting to a guy the other day that heads up Mini in South Africa. And he was giving me some insight as to how seriously BMW and the guys are taking it. And, they realize they've got to have a mechanism. They want to sell electronic cars, I think at that presentation, I'm not sure if you were there.
No, I couldn't make it.
But what he did is he showed the Volvo strategy. And I think that was, Volvo will no longer make internal combustion vehicles. I think it was from 2019. Yeah? That's quite a statement, I don't think, I see that there's still some standard issues, but you know what it's like. It's like when DVDs first came out, the industry will quickly sort itself out, in my opinion. There'll be a standard and there will be a need, and somebody who's there to service that need will make money. And I think Grid Cars is positioned. So I think it's quite exciting.
Great stuff. Before I let you go, Tim, it's been a great discussion, by the way. We were talking just before we started recording, and I was asking you whether Pinnacle sticks with ICT distribution. Is there an opportunity, given that you have all the systems and processes in place that you've built over many years, to allow you to distribute just about anything? And would you?
It's a very good question. I mean, it's interesting. You said that and I had a little smile on my face, because I think I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning the other day and I thought, maybe we should do something else. Because when the RAND slips on you and you get it wrong from a technology point of view, and you think, jeepers, there's got to be an easier way to. No, but it did suddenly, come to me, and I was thinking, you've got the trucks, you've got the supply chain, you've got the mechanism, you've got the financial billing, so we've got an enablement system, we've got the credit. I mean, I think that's one of the big things that people don't realize, how complex distribution can be. We run a massive book, but it's a credit enablement, for our reseller base. So there they are, they can buy from us. I mean, we could sell them anything. We could sell them clothes. So our setup is not, and what occurred to me, the thought started sort of like going through my mind a bit, and I started thinking, but we wouldn't be able to do it in the perishable environment, okay? But what's our strength? It's footprint and go-to-market. We're not a home choice or a Mr. D in that last mile end customer, but we're a B2B development. So one of the things you asked me earlier, which I should have maybe touched on earlier, was that, when we said we're investing, and we're probably investing a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of the ERP that we're putting in now, is one of the key drivers for me in that is to enable our community to digitally transact with us. I mean, it's a no-brainer. In fact, I think we're a bit behind, to be honest. So some of our competitors are clearly ahead of us. But I think we're doing it right now. I think it's at that optimum point. And we're going to, obviously put a lot of focus on that. So if a reseller can digitally transact with you in terms of, you know, I can go online, place an order. It's pretty much like the take a lot sort of basket. Why should he not or she not add another product, you know, that's not necessarily, you know, sort of complementary to, you know, his offering? So we've seen a lot of resellers suddenly realize that there's not much money in this game, and they start doing something else. So I mean, obviously, you know, everyone's talking about software, you know, Office 365 and cloud deployment and electronic deployment, and you've got your payment gateways and your ESDs and, you know, that kind of stuff. So Access is very strong in that space, and we're catching up there. But I think there is potential, not on a short to medium term, but I think there's a long-term basis to say, if you've got your supply chain optimized, okay? I mean, it's like that. It's like we were talking about Amazon. I think that was always their plan to distribute food, you know? Make it, you know, it's a necessary, it's a need. So maybe it could be something like clothes. Maybe it could be shoes, you know? Why not, you know? Never say never.
Watch this space.
Yes. Good.
Watch this space. Tim Humphries-Davies is Chief Executive of Pinnacle. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to Tech Central today.
Pleasure, Duncan. Thank you very much. Thank you.